Hi, everybody. I am Monica Crowley. Welcome to another hour of the Strategy Room. We are an interactive show, as you all know. We love to hear from you. So please be sure to send your emails to us, fast and furious, at strategyroom@foxnews.com. Strategyroom@foxnews.com. They come right to me. We look at all of them, and we'll put the best ones on the air. So shoot us an email, either based on what we're talking about here on the panel, or maybe what's on your mind. Again, strategyroom@foxnews.com. All right, let me introduce my great panel with me today. To my immediate right, this beauty next to me. Aww, look at how adorable you. She is. That's Alicia DeGrossa. She is the events chair of the New York Young Republican Club. Welcome back, Alicia.
Thank you.
See you. To her right, we have Dr. David Tukey. Did I pronounce that right?
That's right.
Dr. David Tukey is an NYU neuroscientist. Smarty pants over here on the panel. David also worked on McCain's 2008 presidential campaign here in New York State, David?
Yeah, I ran New York and New Jersey.
Fantastic. Welcome. Also, you are working with, I guess, a draft Larry Kudlow campaign.
We're doing our best.
To get Larry Kudlow to
trying to get his attention.
Chuck Schumer for the U.S. Senate in New York. The website there is draftkudlow.com. We'll talk a little bit about that.
Thanks, Monica.
We've got Mark Levine, constitutional attorney. Was also on O'Reilly right before me last night. We could talk about that too. And to Mark's right, we have got Joe Slackus, who is a Democratic political consultant and fundraiser. Guys, welcome. We got to hit a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about healthcare. More on the other side. Sit tight. All right, here we go. Welcome back. Now, just to apprise you of what's happening, at 1:45 p.m. Eastern Time, President Obama is scheduled to give a statement about healthcare reform, where his proposal is, where the other bills are, and I guess he's going to give us a roadmap of where he would like to see this thing proceed. So if he arrives on time at 1:45, and that's a big if, we will be taking the president's statement live here on Strategy Room. In the meantime, let me ask you, just as a general proposition, because I was coming upstairs today and I was thinking, what am I going to talk about on Strategy Room? Oh yeah, healthcare. This is like the default issue, and it has been for the last year. And just before we get into the particulars of this, how sick of talking about healthcare are you guys? Because I am up to my eyeballs. Alicia?
I'm past it. Like,
over it.
Over it. Interesting in the beginning, and now I'm done.
Okay.
Are you
over it? And you're a doctor, David.
Yeah.
You're a medical doctor or a PhD?
I'm a PhD. I work at NYU Medical Center, and I'm over it because there's just never been a substantive talk about any of the issues that are actually going to reduce costs. Finally, he's paying lip service to medical malpractice reform and saying it should be a state's initiatives. But we should have had this conversation many months ago when we were actually designing the bill.
Just as a pure boredom factor, Mark, without getting into the specifics of tort reform and all the rest of it, just as a strict boredom thing, aren't you just
I'm ready for
this
to be passed already. You know, we spent a whole year debating it at length. Republicans said they want to start over again.
Well, we're
so Republicans want three more years of this. I say we've had our year of discussion, time to put it to a majority vote.
We're saying we're over it, we want it killed. Joe, are you just bored of this whole thing? I mean, be honest.
Looking forward to Easter when this has been passed.
Oh, when it's passed, yeah. Well,
majority vote.
That now let's talk about the president's strategy here, if there is one. Now, what he announced last week, he put out a new proposal, right? By my count, this is his 825th proposal between his ideas and the Democrats' ideas. I'm being facetious here, but I don't think I'm that far off. So the Democrats have had all of these different incarnations of what they wanted to do. First, they were ultimately for single payer, and then a public option, and then that went away, and then it was exchanges, and it has just been an absolute cluster mess, to be diplomatic about it.
It's moved steadily to the right, steadily to the middle, trying to get Republicans on board. He announced four new initiatives today to bring Republicans on board. Republicans said, you can do everything we want you to do, we'll still say no.
None of those things ameliorate all of the other bad things in this
What's
bill.
Bad he in this
he
bill?
Hasn't taken out any of the bad
What's
stuff
bad
in
this
the bill.
Bill, Monica?
Let's talk about
the cost.
We can't
pay for it.
He is proposing
it saves
a new,
money.
Smaller version, smaller, but the cost is still $1 trillion over 10 years. Explain that to me.
It still saves money. That's the important thing.
The Republicans at the summit meeting, the Republicans, Cantor and Bonner, agreed the Congressional Budget Office numbers are right. So if you're going to accept that, if you're not going to accept that, then...
On the president's proposal, though, there are no... It's just a wild guess, right? A little under $1 trillion, because there's no legislative language attached to the president's proposal, so the CBO has said we can't even score this. We have no idea what this is going to cost.
The point is, we spent trillions on wars we didn't know were going to cost anything. The Iraq War and everything else. We spent trillions on Bush's tax cut. Now this will save us money. And the question is, how much will it save us? Will it save us $1 trillion? Will it save us $700 billion? This helps the budget. On a pure fiscal conservative notion, you should support it.
I got to bat back those 2 points. First of all, on the Iraq War, we have national elections coming up this weekend in Iraq. Even Newsweek's cover story this week says Iraq has been transformed.
Were you willing to pay taxes to pay for Iraq?
Yes, no. I supported the Iraq War.
You supported an increase in taxes.
But you haven't paid anything.
You support increase in taxes.
Let me just...
I just want to get that on the record.
So
Monica supported increase in taxes.
This is on Bush's credit card.
A flourishing Iraq representative democracy there actually was an outstanding investment. And number two, the Bush tax cuts gave us 53 consecutive months of job creation and economic growth.
Gave us massive deficits. Now, if you're fiscal conservative, I'm glad to hear that you were willing to raise taxes. Very few Republicans were. By the way.
I'm not talking about raising taxes.
To pay for the Iraq War. You agree that we should have raised taxes.
Bush cut taxes. He didn't raise taxes.
No, but you agree that to pay for the Iraq War, we should have raised taxes to pay for it rather than going to massive deficit, right?
No, I believe in the deficit. Hang on, Mark. I do not believe in the deficit.
Well, my question is, do you agree
that... There's something called a Laffer curve.
Do you agree in paying for the Iraq War or not?
There's something called the law of tax cuts. Law of tax cuts. You cut taxes, you actually get more revenue into the United States Treasury.
That's not true, and you know it, Monica.
JFK did it. It
JFK lowered it from 90% to 70%. Right now, rates are higher than they were with Ronald Reagan.
When JFK did that marginal reduction in the tax rate, guess what happened? More revenue.
Monica, I'll make you a deal. I will not support raising taxes over 70%. But it didn't work with Bush, and it didn't work with Reagan.
We're talking about apples and oranges, guys. But W
overspent what was coming in. He put it all on a credit card, and now we've got the bill.
Hang on. Talking about apples and oranges, national security versus domestic policy.
But that's my point.
Money.
Republicans aren't willing to pay for health care for Americans, but they want to go into massive debt to pay for a war that we didn't need to fight.
And I want to give my Republican friends here a chance. That is not true. What the Republicans are saying is you do not have to remake the entire healthcare system and spend $1 trillion or $2 trillion in order to do the reforms that are necessary. David, you're a PhD, you're a neuroscientist at NYU. I want you to give us your professional opinion about the Democrats' plan and what you would like to see done in terms of reform.
Well, there are very basic things that can be done that will reduce costs that don't cost $1 trillion. For one, finally, someone's paying some attention to the idea of letting healthcare being bought across state lines. There's no reason that the average person in New Jersey should be paying 9 times as much as the average person in Kentucky. You allow people to buy health care across state lines, you inject some competition in the market, immediately you see costs start to come down. Two, medical malpractice reform. The idea that defensive medicine is increasing costs by 10% across the country is something that's very dangerous, and we need to change the culture of medicine. It starts with doctors being able to prescribe the treatments they know are best, not the ones that are most conservative. So those are two things, and I can go on.
I'd like to respond to both of those, but go ahead, Alyssa.
Even after the last show, we were discussing about preventing infectious diseases in the hospitals.
We each had a very nice discussion where Alicia came to something we agreed on, Republican and Democrat, I'll have you know. Go ahead, tell them.
We agreed on what happens a lot is you go in for one thing, and then you get an infectious disease while you're in there. You get bed sores. Your bed sores get infected, and you either die or stay in the hospital for the next 2 weeks. And these things are what are growing costs in healthcare. If we were able to put some kind of, we don't necessarily have to legislate, but in some kind of way to lower this and put safeguards in, so people aren't getting infections in hospitals, we would lower costs by millions and millions and millions of dollars.
All right, let me just jump
in
with
respond
a couple
to David
of emails. Sure, I'll let you.
Yeah.
Dan says, does the good doctor consider liberalism a mental disorder? I guess that's for you, David. You don't have to answer that. Let's see. Bob Fritch
my listeners consider conservatism a mental disorder. Yeah, that's just name calling.
I think that the answer is pretty obvious. Bob, who is a very loyal viewer to the Strategy Room in Phoenix, Arizona, says, the health care bill, hopefully it will be put to death on Good Friday and not resurrected on Easter like Jesus. So that's very funny.
I want to respond to David's point, because of the kinds that Republicans talk about all the time, across state lines and tort reform. Across state lines means a race to the bottom. And let me give you an example. New Jersey, they require someone who's been raped and abused, a victim of domestic violence, to be covered by health care. Mississippi doesn't require it. If you allow New Jersey employers, and let's face it, 80% of all Americans get their insurance through their employers, to buy the Mississippi plan, it may be cheaper, but a woman who's raped, well, that's considered a pre-existing condition. She won't get coverage. They don't cover, for example, certain diabetes. They don't cover certain cancers. The whole point is states have regulations, and Republicans used to believe in states' rights, used to believe that states should be able to protect their own people. Now they want this race to the bottom. They want the state with the least and worst health care plan to apply to all Americans. Obama has agreed to have national plans go across state lines. He's perfectly agreed with that. He just said they have to obey the standards the state legislators have set up. What's wrong with that?
The essence of this is it's about choice, and it's about building a system where people are not necessarily getting health care through their employers. If you start to create choice this way, you're going to start to create choice by people.
But we both agree that insurance policy should cross state lines, right? Where we differ is that I think the state regulations have to be kept and you think they should be abolished, right? Isn't that the difference between us?
I'm not saying that.
Well, because then you agree with President Obama. Obama has said he supports selling plans across state lines as long as you obey state regulations. You support the health care bill. Way to go, David.
The competition is great.
As a liberal Democrat, I'm all for competition.
I think competition brings the price down. It always does. And on the question of tort reform, 30 cents out of every insurance malpractice dollar that these doctors are paying, 30 cents goes to a claim. Where's that other 70 cents going to? It's going to called profit for the insurance company.
The insurance companies make about 3% profit. There are a vast number of other industries in America that make a lot bigger margin in terms of profit.
Why did the Blue Cross of California
have to... I don't think we should be demonizing, you know.
Why did the Blue Cross of California...
to turn a profit? This is still a private sector economy.
Why did they have to raise their rates 40% last year? Why did my Virginia Blue Cross double my rates in the last 3 years? Has healthcare costs doubled in the last 3 years?
The whole objective of healthcare reform is cost containment.
Exactly.
Cost containment, and what the Democrats' bills do not contain cost.
Yes, they do.
Instead, it spreads it out to every taxpayer in America who's going to pay so much more to fund this monstrosity.
It'll be cheaper for everybody.
Let's be really clear, and I want to have David and Alicia weigh in on this, because you guys know what this is all about. This is not about healthcare. This has nothing whatsoever to do about healthcare. What this is all about is creating an expanding base of people who are dependent on the federal government. That's what this is about. And that's why the Democrats continue to push this sucker, even though 70% of the American people do not
want
it.
Monica, it's about caring for people who've been left out.
Some
people are dying, and the Republicans just don't care. It's that simple.
The American people know you're full of it, and that's why they're rejecting this bill. This is a philosophical difference.
Why do Republicans refuse to cover the uninsured?
Why?
Of course they are. The Republican plan covers less than 10% of the uninsured.
Hang on. I want to give everybody else a chance. Alicia, please weigh in.
All I have to say is this is Obama taking advantage of a crisis.
Healthcare has been a crisis for 60 years. Harry Truman tried to fix this.
That's not what I'm saying.
To expand government.
When Harry Truman tried this, there was only 4% of our economy. Now it's 16%.
One at a time, Mark. Go ahead.
I'm saying that these hard economic times that, in my opinion, were created by Obama, is the crisis, and he's using...
You call the Bush Depression created by Obama?
Wait. Let's not get too far afield. David, I want your opinion on this.
I'd be curious to hear what you say about what Hillary Clinton did to reform the insurance companies in the late 1990s.
About that plan? Look, I think it was better than the current system. Certainly. I actually like President Obama's plan better, but both would have been better.
15 years ago,
skyrocketing premiums came from what? What dysregulation was?
She didn't succeed.
The skyrocketing premiums right now are coming from the fact that the insurance companies want to grab all they can before the Democrats get in there and start regulating them as they should and start controlling what they're doing.
More co- cost another $1 trillion.
Well, we didn't regulate the Securities Exchange Commission. Didn't regulate that business and the whole Wall Street collapse.
Nobody is saying that there shouldn't be reform or regulation. We're talking about
what regulations do you support, Monica?
We're going to answer that on the other side of the break. Saved by the Bell. A quick commercial break here on Strategy Room. Sit tight. We're coming right back. Okay, everybody, welcome back. Let's hit some emails very quickly here. And again, if you want to shoot us an email, it's strategyroom, all one word, strategyroom@foxnews.com. Pam says, Monica, we the people do not want this Obama mess of health care. We cannot afford this. We want jobs. That's interesting, and I want to pick that notion up with you guys in a second. Let's see. Tracy says, Republicans had better stay the party of no. Keep going back to a basic truth. If the health insurance reform bill was so great and so perfect, the Democrats should have and would have passed it in the first place when they had the supermajority. It didn't and doesn't matter 2 cents whether Republicans will vote for this monstrosity. The Democrats don't need them. So your left-leaning guests should be honest. It was their fellow liberals, well, I would say in Blue Dogs and other Democrats who gummed up the
works. Lieberman and Nelson.
Hold on. Let's see here. Bear with me. JJ writes, I can't listen to people who are dishonest about this medical bill. If there are 4 good things in this bill, meaning the ones that Obama, I guess, is trying to incorporate from the Republicans in a very token way, there are 20 bad things. Ask him to justify the backroom deals because they are still in there.
No, they're not.
And the wording hides the truth. We'll deal with
the
that
House
in a second.
The House can get rid of all those.
Linda in Tampa Bay says, I watched last week to see our government in action. I saw and heard some good, viable things some of the time, but most of my time was spent watching Obama roll his eyes as different representatives spoke. She was talking about the healthcare summit from last week. Kyle says, tax cuts work because of basic math. Tax cuts increase the ability of an economy to create compound growth. It is absurd to claim that tax cuts do not encourage economic growth. The problem is spending, and that's
both
the big issue right now.
Tax cuts and spending bring economic growth. There's
Kyle says, Kyle in Niagara Falls says, dear Strategy Room, if you allow consumers to purchase health care across state lines, then the American people can be allowed to make their own decisions. Let's see.
See, the state line thing, we agree. Republicans and Democrats both wanted across state lines. The only difference President Obama says, obey the regulations.
Joe in New York says, since we don't have socialized medicine yet, can't we let this behemoth die due to lack of coverage? I'm not sure what that means, lack of coverage. Except he might be referring to the fact that the Democrats' bill says that they cover 30 million, but they still allege that there are 40 or 48 million people, so it's not universal coverage. Let's see, Barry says, arguing about cost estimates is a waste of energy. Cost estimates of government programs are always wrong and the projections always underestimate the true cost. Bob says, I like my health care. Don't touch it. let's see.
And most people like their Medicare too. They do. 94% of people on government health care like it.
And government health care is going broke. Medicare is going broke.
It's going broke because we care for the sickest. If we brought everyone into the system, the average 30-year-old's healthier than the average 70-year-old.
And I want Joe, I want you to weigh in on this. Yesterday, the Postmaster General of the United States held a press conference. The post office is going broke. They're projecting something like upwards of $300 billion in deficits and in losses over the next 10 years for the Postal Service. Now,
Monica,
the Founding Fathers put very few things in the Constitution. One of them was a Postal Service, all right?
But the Post Office hasn't been subsidized since 1971.
Hang on, Mark. If the government cannot effectively and efficiently give you your junk mail, how in the world are they going to run your heart transplant? Joe, would you like to answer that?
The Post Office hasn't been subsidized since 1971. They are a separate business. They're trying to make it as a business. If they want to raise the price of stamps, I think it's amazing that for 44 cents, I can get something to Alaska. I think that's amazing.
They're going broke.
So just raise it to 47
Medicare
cents.
Going broke. Just
raise
like
it to 50
Medicaid
cents.
Is going, everything
I'd
the government touches, and I include the Pentagon in this. Remember the $600 toilet seats? Look, everything that the government runs is not efficient. So what makes you
not
think
everything.
That they can do healthcare?
Name one.
Roads, police, firefighters?
There are other people on the panel.
Okay.
I love you, but let's give everybody a chance.
I disagree that it's all inefficient. There are abuses, and that's why a good section of this bill goes after those abuses. And when it was brought up by the Republicans, the president said, absolutely. I want to see the health care bill bill passed for purely selfish reasons. I'm starting a small business. I want to know what my health care cost is going to be. I want to know that that insurance company is going to be regulated so that they don't do it to me or to the people who work for me. So,
But Joe, if you're going to start a small business, okay, yes, you want some certainty. You want to know what your government is going to be handing to you in terms of liabilities, tax liabilities, and so on. If you're going to start a small business and the government is going to levy these big new taxes on you and all these new mandates on you and all these new regulations on you in terms of coverage, in
it
terms
will
of
save
what you need
money
to do.
For small business.
On the contrary,
the
I'm taking advantage of programs and cuts that are already in place by the Obama administration.
Ah, so you're taking advantage of government programs. All right, David, weigh in. Please.
My biggest, and it's called starting a business and creating jobs.
Yeah, but the government should be getting out of your way to do that, Joe. They're not helping you.
Regulations help business.
The jobs come from in this country. You look, there's about 600,000 new businesses started every year in this country. One fraction of 1% actually become growth businesses. And since 1980, those businesses are responsible for every job created in this economy. And we need to recognize that we need to be encouraging that sector of our economy more than anything else. A big barrier for people starting companies right now, and I've been there myself, is what do I do about health insurance?
It's a huge barrior. That's why we need universal health care. I don't think employers should have to pay for it.
As far as the post office is concerned,
we need affordable health care and choices for affordable health care.
But your Republican plan makes nothing more affordable.
Back to your post office issue. Back to your post office. If Ben Franklin were sitting there with the glasses on his nose looking at the internet screen, it would be a very different thing that was written into the Constitution. How do you justify that postal service now? I don't think you do. I mean, I think that FedEx does a great job. By the way, my brother-in-law flies one of their planes, or a number of them.
Private sector company.
Absolutely.
I think they do different things.
I'm saying fine, but is the one of the reasons the post office have to keep the price down so that everybody can afford it? How much longer are we going to really need that post office with that screen in front of us?
I still do snail mail. I don't know.
I think that 44 cents is a great price to get something across the country.
But it's not enough.
Because it's a dollar.
Okay, I'm okay with
that.
That's
excessive.
A dollar? To send something across the country? I don't think so.
Okay, but then you
people pay
to pay $2.50
for Starbucks coffee.
New Jersey. Look. you and your universal health care, okay, the government runs all the health care for our indigenous peoples here, right? And they're doing an awful job. Imagine if we had that same service for everyone. It just wouldn't
work. Elisa, why do 94% of people on Medicare like Medicare? That's a huge poll. What else do 94% of Americans agree on?
Well, of course, it's a freebie.
Well,
come
let me
on,
ask you this. Would you banish Medicare?
Okay, and it's going
would
broke.
You repeal Medicare?
You've got to reform Medicare. You've got to reform
would you repeal
Medicaid. Go ahead.
Government health care.
I deal with most of the medical issues in my family, right? My father recently had to get cataract surgery. I'm not going to say the name of the place because he went upstairs. He had his nice insurance upstairs, very nice and pretty. My grandmother, however, is on Medicare, right? Had to go to the same place downstairs, and you should see, it's like a whole other world. It's like third world country where these people have to get. It's not the same. It's not great. It's not amazing.
Well, shame on any doctor that doesn't treat a Medicare patient as good as they treat.
Let me ask you guys this before Rick Leventhal joins us with a story he's doing for the Fox News Channel. If the Democrats' bill is so great and it's going to be so effective and going to save us so much money, why can't the president, Pelosi, and Reid convince members of their own party?
They will. They will.
It's happening. I mean, Nancy Pelosi has said
yesterday. Wait a minute. They just spent a whole year trying to convince their fellow Democrats.
No, they were trying to get a supermajority. Now that we recognize that we don't need a supermajority, majority rule is what democracy is all about. It's how Bush passes tax cuts. It's how all the major health care legislation. It's all the. No, he used budget reconciliation to do it.
Saved by the Rick Leventhal bell on this conversation. Rick, thank you for saving
back
us
to your
here.
Corner.
Hi.
Joining us right now is the wonderful Rick Leventhal from the Fox News Channel, who is doing a great and very interesting, I think, story about medical schools in the United States. Tell us about it.
I had no idea. I mean, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but there are nearly two dozen medical schools, brand new medical schools, opening or about to open across the United States. And this is because of a gap in the system. There had not been a new med. There was one medical school built in the 80s and 90s. And obviously our population is growing, so you have more people who need doctors. And you have an aging doctor's population. Many of the doctors who are practicing today are nearing retirement age. In fact, they say up to a third of them could retire in the next decade. And then you have potentially millions of people who will all of a sudden have health insurance who didn't before, who are going to want a physician to look at them. So they've built all these medical schools, or they're building all these medical schools, and now you have all these new students who are entering medical school for the first time. And so we're covering that on Fox News today.
Well, let me ask you, Rick, how many of these new medical schools are associated with standing universities? Or are they sort of standalone medical schools?
What's
their affiliation?
Some of them are standalone. One we visited is at Hofstra University, where they used to host the New York Jets there. Their practice facility was there. And the Jets moved out, so they had this building that they weren't doing anything with. So they're converting the Jets' former administration building into a brand new medical school. They're looking for accreditation now, so they're planning to open next year in 2011.
Will this additional law give us as many lawyers as we graduate?
That's my question.
You know, will it match the number of lawyers?
You're sharp, man.
This is why we need
tort
reform.
You're sharp, man.
Anyway,
I'm going to tell you something. I actually looked that up yesterday because I was curious. We went out to Scranton, Pennsylvania, where there is another new medical school, Commonwealth, which is currently holding classes at Lackawanna College and is building their own brand new facility that they're going to move into in a year or two. And I looked into whether there were more med schools and law schools, assuming that there were more law schools, and in fact there are. There are 200 ABA-approved law schools in the U.S. There are 131 medical schools in the U.S. There are 77,000 med students right now and over 150,000 law students. So I don't know if we need two lawyers for every doctor. I guess it depends on how good the doctors are.
This is why we need real tort reform. You know, it's interesting, Rick, and I'm so glad you're doing this story, because this is a question that nobody really has raised, especially in this whole healthcare debate. But a lot of very talented American kids can't get into medical school because it's very competitive.
Yes.
And so they go abroad. They go to foreign medical schools.
Right.
In the meantime, hospitals are hiring foreign medical school graduates to come in because of this very doctor shortage that you talked about.
And U.S. medical schools are taking in foreign students, and many of those foreign students are staying here. And some have argued that those foreign students would be better fit, you know, working in their own countries, but that also need doctors. And that one of the reasons why we should have more med schools in the U.S. is so that we can have more homegrown doctors in the U.S. Now, I don't know about that. I'm not getting into that in my story today. But the fact is that a lot of American kids could not get into U.S. med schools because there weren't enough of them.
David is a PhD at NYU in neuroscience.
A lot of people I've talked to who are trying to decide which path they're going to follow in their life are reticent about entering medical school right now because of the state of healthcare reform and how the incentive structure is going to change for doctors going forward. I wonder if these new medical schools are doing anything to try to encourage the best and brightest to still become doctors.
Well, they are, and I raised that question because every medical story I've done recently, every doctor complains to me that they're working longer hours to make less money because of the issues with these insurance companies, reducing the reimbursements to doctors.
Right.
So a procedure that they did, let's say, 10 years ago that they would get $100 for, now they're getting $60 for.
Even though health insurance is double over the last 10 years, doctors get less. Where is all the money going, Rick?
I think we know the answer to that question.
Executive profits and I'd like to stop but people love insurance company executives.
On the question of financing this whole new project about building all of these new medical schools, what's interesting is if they're standalone, where are they raising the money? Money from the private sector, and if they're associated with a public university, where's that money coming from?
Well, I could speak to Commonwealth. I mean, obviously they're raising money. The Hofstra are spending $10 million to build their new facility. Commonwealth says that much of the support they've gotten is from physicians in the area who aren't worried about getting competition from these new graduates. They need the help. They need to reduce their workload on a daily basis, and they welcome all these new physicians, and they're volunteering, they're teaching, they're hosting these students when they get to the point where they're doing residencies and that sort of thing. The issue with doctors today, though, I mean, we could go on all day about that, but they are working longer hours for less money. They are buried in paperwork. And many of them are not happy with the current state of health care and are
most
concerned about where...
Most doctors support insurance reform, don't they?
But you know,
the vast majority support President Obama's bill.
No, they don't. Upwards of 70%. Upwards of 70% of doctors do not support the Democrat.
Just to finish the thought, though,
they want reform, just not that reform.
Just to finish the thought, I did speak to students about this issue, and you know, they're bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, right? I mean, they're full of hope, and they're entering a new field, and they're very excited about it, and they're being taught the basics of what medicine is supposed to be about, and that's care. Doctor-patient relationships, understanding who you're looking at and where they're from and what the culture role plays in that, and looking at them as people and understanding that you're tasked with saving lives and helping people. And these are kids who haven't yet perhaps been jaded.
The mortgage?
They haven't been jaded by the real world yet.
Right?
But they are all about the basis of medicine, which is giving back and helping people.
And that's why I think most people become doctors.
Right.
I don't think they do it to make a massive profit. They do it because they want to help people who are sick.
Well,
yeah.
One of the issues is they call it white chasing green, which is where doctors in their white lab coats begin chasing the green money, and they go into specialties because
surgery.
Right. Because that's how they can make money.
Rich people can pay a lot of money for it, but a poor cancer patient can't.
Right.
So we have an
email for you, Rick, from Alex, who's a regular viewer of Strategy Room in Pennsylvania. And Alex says, Rick, I wish I knew that you were here in town in Scranton, 20 minutes away. I would have bought you a beer.
That's nice. I didn't drink any beer yesterday, Alex. We were in and out of Scranton. I mean, we were there for several hours. We worked all day, and then we drove back.
Did you see the office room? Because I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I asked about that. They don't actually
No, all right.
Dunder Mifflin.
Dunder Mifflin, right. Exactly.
Rick, this is a fascinating story. I'm glad that you're covering it because it's an angle of this whole healthcare discussion that I don't think anybody is really addressing.
Yeah, I mean, the issue is that there are potentially tens of thousands, there will be a need for tens of thousands more doctors, and even these new medical schools can train. So I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about expansion of existing schools.
I think we can all agree on that.
I'd like to also mention that the picture gets a little bit bigger when you say, okay, now how are we getting those medical students, and are we putting enough money into educating on the public university level to get those medical students and get those doctors? So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would love to see a big chunk, say, of the defense budget moved out of there.
Oh, well,
we really stirred the pot here.
Yeah,
didn't we?
I know, right?
All right.
Rick,
when
can we see your report on the ministry?
Well, I think I'm going to be on in the 3 o'clock hour with Shep.
Today,
Definitely on in the 7 o'clock hour as well tonight on Fox Report.
Great, thank you. We'll be watching.
Thank you.
Rick Leventhal, everybody.
Take care, everybody.
Great work. Thank you,
Thank
Rick.
You.
All right, well, in about 5 minutes, if the president sticks to his announced schedule, he will be addressing all of us on health care, making a statement about health care reform. Kyle in Niagara Falls says, Dear Monica, Medicare works based on taking in new money to pay for the people leaving the system. Bernie Madoff's clients liked him until the scheme imploded. I'm 24 years old. I'm tired of paying for these programs that are trillions of dollars in debt. Ponzi schemes never work. You know, you say the same thing about Social Security, say the same thing about Medicare and Medicaid, that we're all working for the generations ahead of us to have a Social Security check every month. And we can say, well, we don't mind that because it'll be there for us.
That's
but
right.
Guys, I mean, we're all relatively around the same age. Well, she's a youngin'. But,
she's younger, too, I think.
Well, then let me ask you this, Alicia.
Mm-hmm.
Does your generation really believe that these government-subsidized programs, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, do anybody in your generation, do they think that those programs are going to be around for them? Or are they planning their lives assuming Social Security is not going to be there or Medicare is not going to be there?
Most people I know assume it's not going to be there. They don't, because they see the little check you get now anyways. It's not worth it to rely on that. But even still, I see a lot of them, they're too young to be thinking about actually planning ahead. I have a fund already, but most people don't.
See, you can tell she's a fiscally responsible conservative. She's already planning for
her retirement. I'm glad you could afford that. Look, I'll tell you something. Social Security, Medicare will be there as long as the Democratic Party is in power. I can bet you will never get rid of it.
You guys have run into the ground.
Right now, it's the law. It's called an entitlement. They must
pay you no matter what. The only way it's going to end.
Don't forget, the Republicans have done some very good things here. There's the prescription drug program. I mean, George Bush gave.
And Halliburton got a lot of money, and oil companies got a lot of money. And
sure.
All right, guys, let me just read one more email. I want to switch gears quickly before the president joins us here on Strategy Room. Pam says, what the hell is wrong with doctors making money? What the hell is wrong with anyone in this country making money? And I will say, look, if you're going to go down the road of being a medical doctor, okay, that is
a long road
to hoe. You are in school much of your adult life until age 30, 32, depending on the length of your residency.
But Monica, you heard what Rick said. Rick said doctor payments are going down.
Wait a minute. Most people go into medicine because they want to help
people. I'm not arguing with you.
But if you're going to go down this long educational road, you need to also know that there will be some financial reward at
the
end of the
day. I agree. And Monica, what Rick said is that doctors are getting less and less every year, while health insurance companies are doubling their rates. Something is wrong with that. I say pay the doctors more if you raise rates just 50%, right? Doctors would, but give it all to the doctors. What's happening is health insurance executives are making huge profits. Doctors get less, patients get less, hospitals get less, and all President Obama wants to do is rein them in. One of the big things the House did just last week was ended the antitrust exemption. I hope we can all agree that health insurance companies should compete in the free market like everybody else.
Aren't you going down the road of price controls? So you're going to have price controls on doctors, price controls on insurance companies, and you're removing the private sector, you're removing the free market.
They already have removed free market. They already have an antitrust exemption. They've had it for decades. The Democrats removed it, and you know what? The Republicans came on board because even they couldn't defend monopoly profits.
That's not what she was saying when it comes to doctors. You're talking about insurance companies. She's talking about doctors.
But that's my point. Doctors are being paid less because insurance companies are taking more and more.
Okay.
Rick said that doctors are being paid less each year.
Before you respond.
I agree doctors should be paid more.
She's got my back right here.
I agree doctors should be paid more.
Hang on one second.
Out of health insurance profits.
Alex, who wrote to Rick Leventhal and said that he would buy him a beer, Alex says, Monica, I would buy you supper and a beer. Don't tell Rick, LOL. Rick's gone.
Hey, Alex, want to buy me something here?
Thank you very much, Alex. Yeah. No, I think Alex is a conservative, so you're on your own, Mark. And Bob says, Monica's an awesome host. Oh, thank you very much, Bob. All right. Well, assuming that the president may be a couple of minutes late here. What is going on with the... Oh, we got to hit a commercial. Okay, we'll hit this. Sit tight. We're coming right back. More on the other side.
Yes, hello.
Okay, welcome back. I'm going to make our Democratic guest today defend Marion Barry. Because...
I'll leave that to you because I'm not going to do it.
Because today, you know, I was putting together a little corruption montage for us to talk about. And, of course, we've got David Paterson, the governor of New York State, up to his eyeballs in yet another scandal. Possible witness tampering in a criminal investigation involving domestic abuse. We've got Charlie Rangel, who stepped down earlier today from the chairmanship of the Ways and Means Committee, because he's being investigated. Gregory Meeks, another New York congressman, in an ethics probe over some charity money that was supposed to go to Katrina victims. Mm. And, of course, my all-time favorite, Marion Barry, who had the greatest political line ever, which was, bleep set me up. And that was about the cocaine bust with the hooker. Yeah. So Marion Barry back in the news today. Apparently he's being investigated. He's a city councilman in Washington for misusing public money and getting
and
a $15,000 contract to a girlfriend.
And getting a kickback from her.
And getting a kickback from her.
Absolutely.
So guys,
I'm throwing him to the wolves.
Culture of
corruption. The difference.
What's going on with your
Here's
party?
The difference between Democrats and Republicans. All right? We have corrupt Democrats. You have corrupt Republicans. The difference is we Democrats throw our corrupt Democrats to the wolves. The city council of Washington, D.C. censored Marion Barry. It's almost entirely Democratic. They did the right thing. They removed Charlie Rangel from his post. They did the right thing. But John Ensign is still a senator of Nevada despite his payoffs. David Vitter is still a senator from Louisiana despite his tryst with the prostitute.
Wait a minute.
You have Governor
Sanford still there.
Personal
sex scandals are one thing. It depends on how they handle it. Mark Sanford, and so I'm not condoning it, but I'm saying that's a huge difference between that and, say, witness tampering, those allegations against the governor of New York, Gregory Meeks.
Tom DeLay what Charlie Rangel did is no worse, in fact, much, much less than when Tom DeLay did, and he ran the Republican Party in the House. All Charlie Rangel did is there were new rules.
You can't excuse bad behavior by citing other bad behavior.
No, but my point is we punish our people when they do bad behavior. You folks don't.
Charlie
that's the
Rangel
difference.
Charlie Rangel has been hanging on for months and months and months, and Sister Pelosi keeps
excusing. hanging on, and you know, come on, he gave up the gavel.
Tom DeLay was majority leader for years.
He did it himself.
Maybe
you
it
guys
took
didn't...
longer than even I would like, but that's. That's
You're
the way
to say
that is.
But let's look,
we
that's
do,
not
but
true.
Let's
Only
look at the real politics
Democrats.
Between the two parties. There's two special elections coming up in May. Hawaii first and Murtha's seat in Pennsylvania. The RNC has no money. They have maybe $4 million. They wasted a whole bunch of money up in the New York 23rd District. They're not going to fight.
Which we and won, by the way.
You know, it's one. You know, the Democrats are looking at $18 million
There's a difference between the RNC and the Republican Congressional Committee and the Republican Senatorial Committee and the Governor, mm-hmm. right? And they're all raising a heck of a lot of money.
I'm just saying.
Money
here come two special
Party.
Elections, and I don't see the Republicans.
You guys are holding out hope because you have lost.
Monica, let me throw a dart at you.
Wait.
Let me ask you a question.
I'll bet you.
Hang on. You guys are hanging by a thread because you have lost every election, special, general, and otherwise, since you started down this health care path.
Elliot Spitzer saw a prostitute and resigned. Didn't use any state funds to do it. David Vitter saw a prostitute. He's still senator from Louisiana. Do you call on him to resign? Right here. We'll make news in the strategy room. Will you call on David Vitter?
I'll tell you the difference.
I want to know if you call on him to resign.
I'm not excusing what David Vitter did.
Do you call on him to resign or not?
I'm not excusing what David Vitter did.
So you don't call on him to resign?
Let her finish.
Because personally, I find it deplorable. I think if you take a marriage vow, you ought to stick to it. But the difference is that Elliot Spitzer was the chief law enforcement officer of the state of New York. So he broke every kind of law knowingly. He couldn't claim ignorance.
He was governor rather than senator.
He was attorney general rather than senator. I'm not excusing any of this, but what I'm saying is that there were real criminal violations here by the state's chief law enforcement officer, which is why he stepped down.
Because he was governor rather than senator.
He had been attorney general.
You want to talk New York?
I want to know if you think Vitter should resign, and if not, why not?
No,
what do you think? Do you think he should resign?
Well, he hasn't, right?
What do you think he should? Would you call on him to resign?
Have there been no?
No. Would you call on Mark Sanford to resign?
Have there been any criminal charges?
How about John Ensign?
Mark, let me get a sentence out. Have there been any criminal charges leveled against David Vitter?
Well, there should be. Prostitution is illegal.
Now, if there had been, and I agree with you, but if there had been, of course he should step down. Nobody brought any charges. They were ready to go against Elliot Spitzer. They had crossing state lines. Mm-hmm. They had prostitution. They
crossing
had a whole range
state lines. Yes, that's what makes prostitution bad. Crossing state lines. Obviously, it's fine if you don't cross state lines, but it's bad if you cross state lines.
He was a bulldozer.
It's the Mann Act. It's a stupid law.
He was a bulldozer over everyone else in all of New York.
And he did a lot of good, frankly.
No,
he helped keep the Wall Street thieves in check.
By the way,
my point is that Elliot Spitzer and David Vitter should be held to the same standard. That's my only point.
Obama's just come to the podium, but Alicia's point was that no Democrats in New York State defended Elliot Spitzer because he was such an obnoxious
nightmare. You called on him to resign, but you don't call on Vitter to resign.
Chief law enforcement, like Bill Clinton, by the way.
Because he's governor rather than senator?
Bill Clinton should have resigned. Okay, guys. Hold on. We're going to pick up President Obama, who is addressing the nation right now on his latest health care proposal. Here we go. Okay, we're going to leave it right there here on the strategy rooms. In the meantime, I want to thank my wonderful, dynamic, passionate panel today. Alicia, thank you very much.
Thank you.
David, thank you. Mark, as always, and Joe.
Thank you
very much, guys. I'm Monica Crowley. Thank you so much for joining us. And I'll be on Megyn Kelly's show in about 10 minutes on the news channel. Check it out. More strategy room straight ahead.